Welcome to Interviews for Resistance. Since election night 2016, the streets of the U.S. have rung with resistance. People all over the country have woken up with the conviction that they must do something to fight inequality in all its forms. But many are wondering what it is they can do. In this series, we'll be talking with experienced organizers, troublemakers, and thinkers who have been doing the hard work of fighting for a long time. They'll be sharing their insights on what works, what doesn't, what has changed, and what is still the same. I am Sarah Jaffe, your host.
I'm Maria Poblet. For 18 years, I've worked in base building and community organizing in the Bay Area, building Causa Justa Just Cause, which I am now the former executive director of. I'm very proud that it's such a democratically held grassroots organization that somebody else is going to take it over and take it to the next stage of its impact.
Yeah, so what have you been working on for your last couple of weeks, months at Causa Justa?
I've been supporting the team of community organizers and kind of the internal leadership in trying to understand the new political moment and the impact we could have. Some of what we've been working on is really reclaiming democracy as a value that comes from communities of color and benefits communities of color and benefits society as a whole. We're one of the few spots in the country that on November 9th had something to celebrate, which was the vast expansion of tenant protections, which we won.
Yep.
Kind of against all odds in the area that's controlled by tech corporations and their interests, we won these huge protections for the tenants that are threatened by displacement. And it's because of the long-term organizing and the ability that organizing builds to lead society as a whole, which is really necessary at this moment. So we've been talking internally about that struggle for democracy, even though we come from a sector of society that doesn't have that many illusions about how democracy works and doesn't work. You know, many of us can't vote and have been pushed out of voting and have been pushed out of parties that say they defend our interests. So we're trying to build a new kind of relationship to democracy and really trying to defend civil liberties as we advance immigrant rights, as we fight gentrification and displacement. And as I'm exiting, I'm trying to figure out how to support the next crop of leaders because they're up against enormous challenges. And
So we're in Oakland. You're in the Bay Area. The Bay Area is this complicated thing of, like, on one hand, it's the most progressive part of the country. We're some of the first places to get to the $15 an hour minimum wage, to really impressive protections for, like, retail workers. And on the other hand, there's all this tech money and there's all this gentrification and there's sort of the kind of liberalism that dresses itself up very nicely but is also supporting policies and just economic growth that displaces the people who have always been here. So, talk about the Bay Area, what it's like to be in this weird world of these two different things.
You know, I think that we're in Detroit in the 60s.
Yeah.
This is a boomtown. And so what you have in the boomtown is the most powerful people, the most powerful corporations in the world, and you also have some of what could be the most powerful movements if they were linked with other movements and if they were building this broader agenda, and that's what we're trying to do. Because when you look at Detroit, when the auto industry left, Detroit has suffered for decades with massive disinvestment, massive unemployment. But all of that came after this period of massive expansion and growth and venture capital and this feeling that it was invincible. That's where we are.
Yeah.
We're at the top of the bubble.
Yeah.
And the contradictions are starting to show. These tech corporations that are driving displacement are having to contend with the anti-immigrant sentiment that is inside their culture, that is maybe against their culture. They're kind of having to choose sides, and what's really interesting is how do they relate to the grassroots? What can we do to build a movement much broader than our base? Our base traditionally has been Black and Latino families. We were the ones at the airport fighting against the Muslim ban and coalition in solidarity with people we'd known 20, 30 years, but also the CEO of Google was there. And it's so great that he was there. What are we going to do with that?
Yeah, and that's a really interesting thing because, you know, the response to the airport protests was like a lot of people were like, oh, this is the spontaneous thing. And like, for some people it was spontaneous. For the CEO of Google being there, it was pretty spontaneous. But for y'all, this is what you do.
Yeah. And well, I think there's a danger when you've been in community organizing in grassroots communities that have been marginalized for a long time to say to everybody else, well, where have you been all this time?
Yeah.
And that's a completely understandable emotional response. But politically, politically, it's a huge opportunity to say, these are problems that you never even knew were problems. We've been fighting to resolve these problems for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. Come along. Let's tell you what we've learned so far. You tell us what you have to contribute. And it's a different posture of leadership, which our movements need to take on at this point. I mean, it's a time of polarization.
Yeah.
Neither of the established parties are really going to offer anything to everyday people. It's the time for social movements to lead.
Yeah, and in that moment, like, it's been a few months since the election, since the inauguration. What has it been like? Have you been bringing in a lot of new people? Have people been sort of showing up and saying, what can we do here? Maria, tell us what to do here. You know, yeah. I feel like you've probably gotten a lot of that in the last few months.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people and organizations who sort of believed that things were generally working turned around in this moment and said, wait a minute, it doesn't seem like things are working. And you guys have been saying this whole time.
Yeah.
So what should I do? It's been a very interesting moment. Part of what we did in response was to, with a lot of other organizations, help start Bay Resistance, which is, I mean, I think now we're like 50 organizations building a network of individuals who aren't part of our base. They aren't service workers in SEIU. They aren't Black and Latino families fighting displacement in Causa Justa. They aren't Asians fighting pollution in Richmond that are in the Asian Pacific Environmental Network. They're people who haven't joined organizations before, and they want to take action now. And so we built this tech sloop, this mobilization machine, turned all those people out, and now we're trying to figure out how does that connect to long-term strategy? How did those folks start to get connected to the strategy that has been developing at the at the grassroots? And how do they influence the strategy as well? They have a different position to play in the game. And when you think about it from a movement-building perspective, the question isn't, do I have a role? The question is, what role?
Yeah.
And most of us haven't been trained to answer that. We've been trained to do one piece of the project and not look at the whole project as a whole. And that's what's keeping us back when you think about being drivers of a really revolutionary change, is like looking at the whole picture, which most of us haven't been trained to do.
Yeah. Yeah, and so we've been, you know, we're in this moment where the center, and this is globally, this is not just in the U.S., the center is collapsing, and so now people are looking to the left. People are looking to people who have been doing this kind of organizing for a long time to say, like, what can you teach us? But in terms of broad politics, there's still this sort of, you know, weird binary of Democrats versus Republicans that, like, in so many ways is just not, it's not even the conversation we should be having. Thinking about, like, you know, for so long, so many people have been sort of, you know, we're doing our part of the thing, right? Doing our part of the puzzle, trying to maintain some space for radical ideas, and now there's a lot more space for them, but also there's just constant horrors coming from Washington. And so I wonder if you have advice for people who are trying to, like, I guess expand the way they look at the world and the way they think about the world to meet this moment.
I mean, it's interesting when it comes to that, it's both something we've never experienced and something societies have experienced forever.
Right.
You know, we're in a massive moment of transition. What's going to come next is a different economic system than capitalism. The question is it going to be more democratic and offer more equity? Or is it going to be less democratic and more unequal? And we can't control every part of it. This isn't like you go into a room and make a plan. That's not how history works. But can we build forms of organization and political vision that really drive towards a more democratic, more egalitarian society? What's really interesting is this moment of polarization where everything feels unfamiliar, that's actually the space that we needed to make the arguments that we've been wanting to make, because limiting politics to you're either a Republican or you're a Democrat, it misses the vast majority of people and the vast majority of their experience, and certainly their longing, their vision, what they want for their own families, for their children. You know, my kid's going to be growing up in a world after Trump shaped the economy. Like, oh man, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of us are thinking about that.
Yeah.
What are we going to do that sets the stage for who's next? Because when you think about young people, I mean, my kid's too. He's not a good example, right? He's very young. But their vision is really different.
Yeah.
Their criticism of capitalism is much deeper than anybody's before. The question is, what are we for?
Yeah.
And in the United States, we've been really good in the progressive movement about listing very explicitly everything that we are against and why.
Yeah.
What are we for? That's a huge risk.
Yeah. Well, and often we've had to sort of say very specifically what we're against because we can't sort of broadly say what we're against.
Yeah.
Right, we can't sort of say, no, we just are against capitalism.
Yeah.
We sort of have to be like, we're against displacement, or like, you know, we're against this, like, and like, we can't just sort of say, like, this system is killing us.
Yeah.
And that's like where we are now.
Well, I don't know, you know, I mean, I think what's interesting about this moment is that a lot of people are saying there are systemic problems. And if somebody could run for president and get millions of votes and say, I'm a socialist, then their conditions are new. Conditions in people's minds and hearts and in our communities are new. How is our organizing going to address those new conditions?
Yeah. And that brings us to Left Roots. Yeah, for people who I imagine a lot of our readers are not familiar with Left Roots, tell us what Left Roots is and where it came from.
Left Roots comes out of people doing community organizing, long-term committed organizers in communities of color who have been fighting around issues of pollution and displacement and expulsions in schools, issues that are visceral in people's lives and that mainstream progressives often didn't care about. And we're trying to build the capacities of that group of people for long-term strategy, for really transformational change in our society. Left Roots is kind of a capacity-building project, really. And in these conditions, we can't avoid the question of some strategic realignment. Everybody's in strategic realignment, right? It's like there are people who had some shades of difference around among progressives that are now building long-term partnerships together because of the conditions. So there's a lot of opportunity for people who came into this work that is about concrete reforms, but really they weren't in it for the reforms. It was important to have a new stoplight. It was important to have rent control. It was important to have a higher minimum wage. But I wasn't in it for the higher minimum wage. I was in it because I thought exploitation was wrong. So what am I doing about that initial commitment, that value that I held? How is it that that value doesn't have organizational form? And Left Roots is trying to create the network of relationships that can give that value organizational form.
Yeah, we've been talking about how there is that space for that now. People are looking for that now. People are looking for the thing that says, this is my political home and this expresses my political values as a whole, and not just the specific thing, but the broad thing that drives that specific thing. And so, and we've seen a lot of growth of different organizations since this election. So, yeah, I guess my short question is, what's next?
I think what's next is a real reckoning with where we made mistakes.
Yeah.
Really, in the U.S., in communities of color and community organizing, actually in organizing in general, you can say, it's easy to say, well, that was them, and you know, the Democrats made this mistake, and yeah, it's true and it's not true.
Yeah.
All of us have a family member who voted for Trump. So,
oh, I certainly do.
So given that reality, what are we going to do to address that? Because we weren't built to organize those people. So what do we need to build to organize those people? What's the new scale? What's the new campaigns? There's promising possibilities around universal health care in California, single payer in California. There's the possibilities of sanctuary state in California. California's a really interesting place because we've been majority people of color for a long time, and it hasn't always meant progressive change. In fact, what you've had is people of color and women who represent progressive change by their standing in leadership, but not by their exercising of leadership. And the difference between standing in a leadership position and being from a marginalized community and acting on behalf of marginalized communities is the organizing of those communities, which is stronger than it's ever been.
We didn't actually, I forgot to ask about single payer, but yeah, I mean, California is, for many reasons, very important in this kind of organizing, and there's this, like, trend that says, you know, we should, California and New York and whatever should secede, but on the other hand, there's the possibility for California to pass really incredible progressive legislation and lead the rest of the country.
Absolutely. Especially when California and when the Bay Area with the most progressive policy ideas, which come from the most progressive grassroots organizing, leads California, California can lead the nation.
Yeah.
And instead of disengaging from the nation, you could have California say, we're not going to pay our taxes unless these values that we hold core around diversity, inclusion, and this sort of vision of what a majority people of color nation looks like get met. I mean, that would be amazing. We're far from that at this point, but we're a lot closer to that than we were just 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I was involved in this fight to create the sanctuary policies in San Francisco applying to economic refugees instead of political refugees. That was like in the 90s and 2000s, and there was no way that was going to pass on the state level. We had no shot at all. There was nobody who would talk to us about it.
Yeah.
After Trump got elected, the governor was saying, I'm for a sanctuary state. I have no idea what it means, is what he was saying to himself on the side.
Yeah, but you know.
But all of a sudden, I need to stand for immigrants, and I don't know what that means, and I have to reach all the way to the grassroots to grab a policy to tell me what that means. Well, that's a huge opportunity for us. And whether or not that's real depends on the level of organizing, how much we push, when the federal government comes down, however they come down, are they going to stand in defense of immigrant communities and against exploitation or not? That depends on the level of organizing. And the rise of the right has created all these opportunities for the left. Because the center is like, it's like the center road is bombed out. You either have to make a hard left or a hard right. And we're like, hard left, we're over here. Put me in, coach.
I love it. How can people keep up with you and your work?
I'm at Maria del Pueblo on Twitter. And we'll see what my work is next. I'm trying to build an independent political organization.
Interviews for Resistance is a project of Sarah Jaffe with assistance from Laura Faillebois and support from the Nation Institute. You can find more information at necessarytrouble.org. Thanks for listening.